I believe all of us have enjoyed watching the Olympics, both the Summer Olympics and the Winter Olympics. It's always fun. It's interesting to watch people. Well, for example, the Winter Olympics, you have the gymnastics, you have the figure skating, you have the downhill skiing, things that you look at and admire, the dedication, the time they've put into it, and how they've been able to achieve perfection in a sport that is very, very difficult and hard. In the Summer Olympics, there are great feats both in track and field events. Certainly examples of that would be individual races. Pole vaulting. If you've ever tried to pole vault, you know that that really is something when you begin to see somebody go up over the bar at 15 feet and extend themselves up that pole vertically and then come over the top without knocking that bar over. Or even the high jump, jumping 7 feet. That's hard to imagine that you can get your body and lift it literally 7 feet over that, off the ground and over that pole without bringing it down. And of course, many of the world record holders are inches higher than that as well. Well, I'm sure that times we wish that, and we see things like that, that those talents or the opportunities to be able to develop those talents would have come our way at times in life. These are things that young people can do and have trained for many, many years, but those talents are not going to always stay with them as they get older. We know as they get older, things are going to begin to slow down for them, and they'll have to look for other things and other talents to discover, to develop, and to use in their lives. What about all of us in the Church of God? I thought it was interesting, the question about are we soldiers? We have never served, a lot of us, in the military, but we are soldiers certainly in this life. What about when it comes to the talents that we have? Have we really discovered our spiritual talents, developed those talents, and used them in service to God? It is something that I would like to look at because I believe it is a very important part of a Christian's life, not just only to be called, but because of that calling to begin to discover, well, what are our talents? You know, even these athletes that we admire and look at and people who do some of these incredible feats in the Olympics, that's not their only talent. And human beings have more than one talent. And Christians have more than one talent and more than one spiritual talent as well that we can be able to use. We are different from these athletes that you see in the Olympics. They have yet to discover spiritual talents in their life. They have learned many lessons that will stay with them when their event or sport comes to an end because of their age, because of lessons of character that it required. And certainly those are good things. But now, what about some of the talents that God has called us to discover, to learn, and to use in our life? God is the source of our gifts. He is the source of our talents. The Bible tells us that. Let's begin by asking, well, what is a talent? What is a talent? Well, Webster's Dictionary defines it as several different things. One, a special natural ability or aptitude. You know, some people do, in the physical world, have the ability to do things better than others. I played baseball. I was better than many others, but there are many, many who are better than I ever was. We have different levels of our talent and ability. Is how far can we go with it? This is, I'm talking, of course, using analogy in the physical world. Going on, another definition, it's a capacity for achievement or success. And it is gifted. It is gifted. Now, the dictionary wouldn't give the source of the gift, but I would to a Christian, and the Bible, as you will see, does. It's from above. And finally, it's a group of persons with special ability. A group of persons with special ability. Here is a group of people with special abilities, but sometimes we never give ourselves credit to what those abilities are that we've been called to and to those particular talents. We may not have all of the talents. We may not have had the opportunities to really discover and develop our talents because all of these people I've been talking about so far, in a physical sense, they had to develop that talent. They really knew, they did not know from day one how far they could go. And, you know, there are people who do not really develop the talent. They discover that they have certain talents, but they don't really want to develop them, and so they'll never discover how far they will go. Well, you know, I think the physical, we can take a look as an analogy to the spiritual as well. Now, God has given all of us spiritual talents or gifts, and we don't have just one. But as a Christian, we are to seek, to discover, and to develop, and to use the talents that God has given. Let's notice here in 1 Corinthians chapter 3. 1 Corinthians chapter 3, verse 5 and 6. Paul, writing here, says, "Who then is Paul, and who is Apollos, but ministers through whom you believed, as the Lord gave to each one? I planted," Paul says, "Apollos watered, but God gave the increase." So God gave them both a talent to minister. But Paul's was a little different than Apollos. His talent was used to plant and to plant seed. Apollos, who was also given the talent to minister and to serve in that capacity, his talent or gift was to water or to feed that which Paul had already planted. It was a teamwork situation. But it is God, and Paul is recognizing that very clearly here and trying to explain it to the Corinthian church. It's not one versus the other. It is a gift that I have received. It is a gift that Apollo has received, is what Paul is saying. And it is not exactly the same. And yet it is being used. It's being discovered, it's being developed, and it's being used. Matthew chapter 25, in Matthew chapter 25, and verses 14 and 15, in verse 14, "For the kingdom of heaven is like a man traveling to a far country, who called his own servants, and he delivered his goods to them. And to one he gave 5 talents. To another he gave 2, and then to another he gave 1, to each according to his own ability, and immediately he went on a journey." The reason I read that is because it's an interesting thing pointed out here in this parable that Jesus is giving. To each according to his own ability. We're not all the same. We may have the same talents, but we may not have the same ability with that talent as our neighbor. And that's why there are different levels, you might say, of the same talent from individual to individual. We are all unique. We do not have the same talents nor the same abilities. Everyone has more than one talent. And we all have talents that we haven't discovered yet. And that's the thing. We can go throughout all of our life, and a lot of times people come to retirement, "Well, I'm tired and I'm done and I'm ready to rest." No, because there are talents that we have with each level of age that we can yet discover. That our lives continue to be useful, our lives continue to be meaningful, and being able also to be used in service. In Matthew, while we're here in chapter 25, let's drop down here to verse 24 and read verses 24 through 30. "Then he who had received the one talent came and he said, 'Lord, I knew that you to be a hard man, reaping where you have not sown and gathering where you have not scattered seed. And I was afraid, and I went and I hid your talent in the ground. Look, there you have what is yours.' But his Lord answered and said to him, 'You wicked and lazy servant, you knew that I reap where I have not sown and gather where I have not scattered seed. So you ought to have deposited my money with the bankers, and at my coming I would have received back my own with interest. Well, therefore take the talent from him and give it to him who has 10 talents. For to everyone who has, more will be given, and he will have abundance. But from him who does not have, even that he has will be taken away. And cast the unprofitable servant into the outer darkness, and there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth, as he goes on to say. Well, in verse 25, backing up, this individual let fear, as he said, which was probably, and as we see about a verse or two later, was an excuse for laziness, stop him from developing his talent. And in this case, the talent is being referred to here as money or investment, and using it. Well, certainly the principle behind that, when it comes to the talents we have, as you'll see as we go along in this message here today, that we have to use what we've, well, we first of all have to discover, and then we have to develop and use it. In verse 26, he was called wicked and lazy for this, for what he did. And in verse 28 and 29, those who work hard and develop their talents will receive more. They will be given more. We could go back to verse 20 and 21, and we see what, let me read it quickly, verse 20. So he who had received 5 talents came and brought 5 other talents, saying, Lord, you have delivered to me 5 talents. Look, I have gained 5 more talents besides them. Well, his Lord, verse 21, said to him, well done, good and faithful servant. You were faithful over a few things, and I will make you ruler over many things. Enter into the joy of your Lord. Well, as you get to the bottom of this particular parable, the one who had gained the most, actually, the person who buried his talent was taken and given to the one who had produced the most. And that is very true, both physically and spiritually. So, anyhow, in verse 20-21, he was faithful in using what he was given, the person there who had the 5 talents and had been able to double it. So God expects, obviously, and this is shown here in this parable, that we take and we use what we've been given. In a lot of cases, we have to discover what it is. People don't always know what it is. Another example to look at is here in Matthew chapter 13. Matthew 13. And in Matthew 13, verse 10 through 12, and the disciples came and they said to him, why do you speak to them in parables? And he answered and he said to them, because it has been given to you to know the mysteries of the kingdom of heaven, but to them it has not been given. For whoever has, to him more will be given, and he will have abundance. But whoever does not have, even what he has will be taken away from him. And really, it's almost like it's talking about the situation there of the person in the parable of the talents as well. In verse 12, for whoever has, let's stop and ask, has what? Has what? What's he referring to? The truth and the Spirit of God. The truth and the Spirit of God. If we go on to verse 16 and 17, but blessed are your eyes, for they see, and your ears, for they hear. For surely I say to you, that many prophets and righteous men desired to see what you see and did not see it, and to hear what you hear and did not hear it. What is he saying here to all of us and to his disciples specifically right there? He was saying to them, you have been given things that the prophets wanted to see and never did see it. And so to him who much is given, much is expected. Much is expected. Can we bury our talent? Is that what we are to do? Sometimes I've seen this over the years in the church where people just simply, well, I just want to hear a sermon and go home. I don't want to be involved with people. I just kind of just me, myself, and I with the Lord. It's an attitude the individual who takes that approach does not realize, but it is burying their talent. They don't even know what the talent is because they haven't discovered it yet, let alone developed it, and have not involved themselves in any way whatsoever. Sometimes we address this as being maybe a Laodicean attitude or use other ways to describe, but I'd like to look at it from the perspective of talent and gifts, of talents and gifts. And because the Bible does talk about that, and Paul certainly was the one telling us where they came from. One other one here before I go on to another aspect of this is in Luke chapter 12. Let's take a look at Luke 12. Yes, we do receive gifts. We do receive understanding. We have an understanding that Olympic gold medal athletes have yet to receive. And the question is, what are we doing with it? It's something that we all have to think about. Now, I just as much as you. In Luke 12 and verse 45, "But if that servant says in his heart, 'My master is delaying his coming,' and begins to beat the male and female servants and to eat and to drink and be drunk, the master of that servant will come on a day when he is not looking for him and at an hour when he is not aware, and will cut him in two and appoint his portion with the unbelievers. And that servant who knew his master's will and did not prepare himself to do according to his will shall be beaten with many stripes. But he who did not know, yet committed things deserving of stripes, shall be beaten with few. For everyone to whom much is given, from him much will be required, and to whom much has been committed, of him they will ask the more." So we should capitalize on our strengths, is what he is saying. Capitalize on your strengths and work to improve on your weaknesses. As we grow in grace and knowledge of the Lord, as it says in 2 Peter 3:18, we will unlock and discover more of our spiritual talents and gifts. In verse 47, "If we refuse to do our master's will, we will not be of much use to our master, Jesus Christ, will we?" We are called not because, well, I want to say, yes, God does want to save us, but he wants to save us for a purpose, that we will be able to discover, develop, and use our talents in service to him and to his son. And that's why we are being called in this age. And that's why people will be called in the ages to come as well, because there will be service for them to do at that time. This is something that's very important. This is why when it comes to repentance and baptism, you do not want to be putting that off when you know the truth. And we don't want to bury the knowledge, understanding, and the talents that God has given to us. Now let's consider some of the reasons why Christians do not always develop all of their talents. Now there are people who've been in the church maybe for years and just haven't, because they have done other things and have not been interested. I have about four reasons here that I have seen over the time that I've been in the church, and I think it's supported here by scriptures, even some which I've already read. The first one, why people let themselves be held back, is fear and inferiority feelings. I'm not good enough. The fear of rejection or of not being accepted. Very real to a lot of people. So some will reason, why try? Just play it safe and, without realizing it, bury my potential talents before they're ever discovered. A lot of times, you men probably years ago would relate to this. It was like pulling teeth to get some men to come to Spokesman's Club to find and develop talents. And I don't want to find and develop those talents, many people said. And yet they were there. And God certainly would help them and to develop and to use them. Obviously, with coming to search for and develop some of the talents that may be there that we have not really seen and used yet, we have to have a willingness to want to do that. Now, I agree with probably all the rest of you. There are things that I like to do and things I don't like to do. And I could name some things that I'm now involved in writing, and I'll admit I have never wanted to be a writer. And and it is work. I don't know what talent is there. I guess we'll find out. But we are all becoming writers now in the church. And maybe with age and a little more experience, but that was not something I liked to do. There is some talent there. Otherwise, they would tell me, forget it. but they keep giving me assignments. So anyhow, but we're all that way. And we have to stop and look, is it something I'm putting off? Is it something because I just don't like to do it? I'd rather be doing this over here. Now that is fun. That is enjoyable, whatever that might be. We're all human. But we have to come here and not let any kinds of fear that I can't do it or inferiority that others are much better than I am, so why try? That tends to be an excuse, doesn't it? Tends to be an excuse. Well, Paul said something about that over here in Romans chapter 12. In Romans chapter 12, and verses 1 and 2. I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable to God, which is your reasonable service. And do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. We all are or have been fearful about some things in this life, right? Instead of saying, is what he is telling us here, I can't do this, we should let Christ transform us, transform our mind and our thinking, to say, how do I get this done? How do I get it done? And because it can be done when God guides and directs us through it. We'll have different levels, as I've mentioned already before, of what we can achieve. We have not been given the spirit of fear. And that's what Paul was saying in 2 Timothy 1 and in verse 6. We are not given the spirit of fear whatsoever. That's one of the things that people will hold back on. I'm afraid to do, I'm uncomfortable, you know, different words saying the same thing. So that will be one thing that will keep us back from developing talent that really is there. Now, let me just say one other thing about talent. It takes hard work to bring it out. It is not something that's just, well, there's a few people in the physical world, depending on what it is, that maybe you maybe saw the movie The Natural. Was that the one it was called? The Natural? I think it was. What's his name? The baseball player and everything. There are some who are little great standouts who have become great. Well, you know, golf, Tiger Woods. But Tiger Woods is a very hard worker at his game. He is the greatest in the world today when it comes to playing golf. But he is also one of the hardest workers at his profession. Now, there's other things in his life that has, you know, made the news and got things out of control. Very unfortunate those things happen or were allowed to happen. But when it comes to that talent that he has, he does have a natural coordination to be able to play that, but he does it better than anybody else. He probably works harder than anybody else. And yes, it takes quite a work ethic in many cases to bring out some of those talents. In some of our spiritual talents, it's going to take work and effort as well. Let me go on to another one gets in the way many times so that we don't either discover or we don't even develop and use, and that is laziness. Laziness. Did I get an amen there? Is that... Okay. Well, our generation is the laid-back age, isn't it? It's laid-back. Just relax. Take it easy. When I was down in Jamaica a number of years ago, what was it down there? No problem on. Everything, just take it easy. Don't get too excited. Don't get stirred up. Don't be too zealous. Just keep it calm. Keep it calm, and all of that. Well, this age of leisure makes it hard to get excited about discovering one's God-given talents. And we all have, I don't think any of us here are just out and out lazy in character. We're lazy about certain things that we don't like to do. And other things we work hard at because we enjoy them or we want to do them. But the Bible talks in terms of those who are just, their whole character seems to be lazy. And we don't, like I say, we need to apply some of the instruction given in the Bible to those areas that, yes, we do find ourselves being lazy in and not wanting to get completed or done what we know we should do. And, of course, one of the best examples is in Proverbs chapter 6, go to the ant, you sluggard. Well, it's good for us to review that at times and to think about that in terms of, well, where in my life am I being a sluggard still? There are certain things. You know, it's interesting. You see a lot of times people come down to, I notice it on the Southwest coast, you have people coming down for the wintertime, snowbirds we call them. You have Europeans come down, Canadians come down, and so forth. And I have a chance a lot of times when I'm out there, if I go out on a Monday afternoon, which is the best time to get out for myself, and affordable too, I get paired up with some of these people. And as you're playing and talking with them, they're interesting people, but a lot of them have this attitude. And they're down here for the winter and just to do nothing. Just down here to do nothing and get away from the cold weather. Well, I can identify getting away from the cold weather. I can't blame them for that. But to do nothing. That's why I have a problem with retirement. Retire to what? Now, I can understand when people have a monotonous job that they've done for 40 years with the same company or whatever, but you do want to make plans if you retire from that, that you're going into something else where you have, for your age and your time in life, good discovery of talents, that you have plenty to do that is useful, not just something to do for activity. But as one particular book I read a number of years ago, and I have used it at times in sermons, How to Make a Habit of Succeeding by Mac Douglas, that what you do in your goals should be that which really supersedes yourself. In other words, it's not just for self, but that you're doing something that goes beyond yourself in some way of service, in some way of activity of helping other people. And I thought that was very, very sound, and I thought that was also biblical, too. Anyhow, let's take a look here at Proverbs 6 and verses 6 through 11. Verse 6, go to the ant, you sluggard, and consider her ways and be wise, which having no captain, overseer, or ruler, provides her supplies in the summer and gathers her food in the harvest. And how long will you slumber, O sluggard? When will you rise from your sleep? A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to sleep. So shall your poverty come on you like a prowler, and your need like an armed man. We were talking to our son last night, who's now a superintendent in this particular job at a hospital where they're building onto the hospital. And he was talking about some of the individuals that were assigned under him on the floor that he's working on and building it. And really fit this description, and telling us how that he really needs to get rid of them, because you have never seen anybody walk so slow and hardly can pick up a tool and to go through, just going through the motions. They don't care whatsoever. They're there just to get in 3 months so they can go back on unemployment. And you know, it slows production down, and we can't get anything done when we have people like that. And, you know, that really, those are people in the world. They do not understand or know these things, and they do not have converted minds. The important thing is for those who do have converted minds, who have the Spirit of God, that we do not want to fall into this trap in any way. And so certainly laziness can be one of those things that can hold us back. A Christian must choose to be self-motivated. Self-motivated. How else do we overcome if we are not self-motivated? If we're never motivated to anything, we don't overcome. And to him who overcomes is the one who will receive reward and be in the kingdom. Volunteer for service. Look for what needs to be done and do it. Build good work and service habits. Those are things that always go along with. Those are the things that we certainly need to teach our young people. How to be a good worker. Just simple things like this. What needs to be done that's not been done on the job? Do it. Don't wait to have to be told to do it. good work habits, good service habits, always looking, what can I do here? I see a job that needs to be done. And by the way, I want to appreciate all of you. You see here, getting close to 1 o'clock, you help the custodians putting these chairs because you see it needs to be done. I haven't ever told you to do it. And I shouldn't, right? There's a job. Our young fellows right here, I see many times at the service here before church over here, things that you're all doing. That's what God is looking for. There are talents in that. We are learning things, and who knows where it leads to. We don't all know at this point, but when we have those kind of habits, it will lead to good things. And as the parable shows, more will be added, more will be given. So good work habits, that is a great talent. And it's getting more and more rare to find it in the country we live in the world we live in today. A third area that slows people back, and we're all guilty of it, I have to raise my hand on this one, is procrastination. Procrastination. People who procrastinate are not lazy. It is a difference here. They're always busy doing many things, but they seem to always put off doing the important and essential things to the last minute. And maybe you might know somebody like that. I do. They really enjoy working at what they enjoy doing, but the important things are put off to the last minute, and good quality work is usually missing as a result. They intend to do it, but never seem to. Well, I have to plead guilty to that as well, and maybe you do too, huh? a lot of things that, my wife a lot of times might ask me, well, when are you ever going to get around to doing? Well, I'll get to it. It's on my list. No. but seriously, though, procrastination can be also something where we put off doing the things that will help us to discover some of our spiritual talents and be able to develop them and to be able to use them in service to others and to Jesus Christ. And the fourth area, before I go on to another aspect of this, is selfishness. Selfishness. You know, we can be self-satisfied and simply not care if we discover or develop our spiritual talents. Now, I have run into people in the church who I don't know if they consciously thought that way, but by their actions, that's the way it was coming out. And we don't want to be that way. And not be self-satisfied and just with myself. That leads us into bearing our talents. Well, first of all, we back up. Before we can bury them, we have to know what they are. We don't get to finding out what they are when we have that attitude and approach. Well, Christians are called to care and be concerned for others. And in such, that means if we're going to do what we're called to do, we're going to be discovering, developing, and using the talents as we begin to see them. All right, what are the spiritual talents that God gives that we can discover and use? Been talking all about it up to this point. Let's go over to Romans chapter 12. Romans chapter 12. And here we find, it's interesting about this, Paul, you're going to see the word gifts here when I get there, getting through my pages. And it comes from the word charisma. We use that word, it's an untranslated word we use in our English language. You know, he or she has real charisma. What are we saying when we say, using it in this age, in this time, today? Well, they really have a talent of being personable and being able to handle a public relations situation or something of that nature, that they have that ability. Well, let's take a look at it. Charisma, the gifts. It actually is not a single gift. It's a number of gifts here in chapter 12. And let's begin in verse 4. For as we have many members in one body, but all the members do not have the same function. How true. We don't all have the same gifts, do we? Or the same talents. So we being many are one body in Christ and individually members of one another. Verse 6, having then gifts, charisma, differing according to the grace that is given to us, let us use them. If prophecy, let us prophesy in proportion to our faith. And as Paul uses the word term prophecy in the New Testament, he is not talking about foretelling the future. He's talking about teaching of the Word of God. And that is how it is used in the New Testament. There is no foretelling of the future. The only prophecy that was really given, you might say, was the book of Revelation, but it was given to John, who recorded. A few things that Paul did say in 1 Thessalonians 5 and 2 Thessalonians 2, much of that was taken from the book of Daniel. And he was adding, you might say, to it, because he could foresee in his time and age, the Roman Empire was in existence at that time, how these things were beginning to come about. Anyhow, coming back to this, let's take a look at some of the individual ones here in, prophecy or teaching of the Word of God. Verse 7, or ministry. The word there is diakonos. It means service. Diakonia, with the I-A ending, is deacon, deaconess, the word used for that. This is not talking about ministry as an ordained elder. This is talking about service by the word diakonos here. Let us use it in our ministry or our service. He who teaches in teaching. He who exhorts in exhortation. He who gives with liberality. Now you notice this is not a pastoral letter. He's not writing to Timothy or Titus. He's writing to the church at Rome, which at this particular time was apparently a very, very small church. And I'm not sure that Paul... there's no record here Paul began this church. It must have been somebody else who began it. Paul had not yet gotten to Rome, as he says later here in this same long letter. Verse 8, he who exhorts in exhortation, he who gives with liberality. You know, did you ever think about that? I thought about using this the other day and taking up the offering, and then I thought, well, no, I won't. I'll save it. God calls that, and Paul is inspired to write this, that it is a gift or a talent to be able to give. And to do it, he says, and do it with liberality. And look at all these gifts or talents that he's bringing up here. He who leads with diligence, he who shows mercy with cheerfulness, let love be without hypocrisy, abhor what is evil, cling to what is good. Be kindly affectionate to one another with brotherly love. Going all the way down here to verse 11, not lagging in diligence, fervent in spirit, serving the Lord, rejoicing in hope, patient in tribulation. That's a gift. All of these are following verse 6, having then gifts differing from one another. And now he's starting to list them all down here. These are spiritual gifts, and every one of us has these gifts that he's mentioned, almost every one of them, depending on, now some of them we may not have the gift of, everyone does not have the gift of prophecy or teaching, or maybe leading others, as Mr. Garland said, that we have to learn to be good followers before we can be leaders in the sermonette. So we may not all have exactly, most of these things we can do and develop and discover in ourselves. You know, when people have come into the church and they become converted, receiving God's Spirit, their whole countenance, everything changes. They do things based on what we see in the Bible that they never did before they came into the church. He talks about, I believe, hospitality here. Yes, in verse 13, given to hospitality. I've seen people who are just love hospitality and show hospitality to brethren and want them to come over after church or whatever, you know, for a meal or just drop in anytime, that type of thing. But they never did that before they were converted. But now it's something they really, and they don't realize they have discovered something they never did before. And a lot of it, of course, comes by the fact that God's Spirit is there too. There's a lot of these things that we can develop. All of our talents, it's not just something we do one time here. rejoicing in hope and so on, all of those things. No, we do not. There's a couple things here that I'd like to also make a little bit more comment on, because, you know, some people, I think I said earlier, we are restricted in the things that we can do physically, depending on our health and our age. And sometimes people think that, well, what am I good for anymore? I'm just over the hill here physically, and I can't do much of anything. I'd like you to take a look here, and I'll come back here to Romans, but over here in Luke chapter 2, Luke chapter 2, and this is probably, well, this is really, as far as I can, I've never seen anything yet that would be any greater than this. This is really one of the greatest services that we can do here. In Luke chapter 2 and verse 36 through 38. Now, Jesus was kind of brought him up to Jerusalem after 8 days for circumcision and everything. Actually, it's also here after the 40 days too. I'd have to read it more carefully. But anyhow, they ran into two individuals, one named Simon, who was prayed that he would not die until he saw the coming of the Messiah, and this woman named Anna, and she's the one I want to look at here. Verse 36, now there was one Anna, a prophetess, the daughter of Phanuel of the tribe of Asher. She was of a great age and had lived with a husband for 7 years from her virginity. And this woman was a widow of about 84 years. Okay, so she had been married 7 years and had been a widow now for 84 years. And whatever she was when her age was when she got married, you can, this woman is probably over 100 years old. And, well, you know, how can she develop any talent? She's somewhere between 100 and 110 years of age. I'm trying to add these figures up. 84 and 7 is 91. Well, how old was she when she got married? Maybe she was less than 20, but if it was 20, then that'd be 111. If she was 15, still that would be 106. So this is a very elderly woman. I think we'll see why she lived so long also here. She was a very productive woman. Let me get on here, verse 37. This woman was a widow for 84 years who had not did not depart from the temple, but served God with fastings and prayers night and day. And coming in that instant, she gave thanks to the Lord and spoke of him to all those who looked for redemption in Jerusalem. Now, obviously, this woman's prayers with fasting, were heard on high. And this is something that even if you cannot physically do anything else, you can pray. We've had people in the church who have been quadriplegic and could not do anything, and they were much younger than this woman, obviously, and had, you know, because of an accident before they came into the church type thing, and were left that way. In fact, I remember this lady at the feast up, I wonder what's ever happened to her, from Kentucky, that was in the wheelchair and had to, she was paralyzed from a car accident, and when she was a young lady, about 18 to 20 years of age. Don't remember her name now, but I do remember her seeing her at Jekyll Island a couple years in a row. And obviously it was in a situation where what could she do physically? Not a whole lot anymore, unless God healed her. But you know, a lot of times God withholds healing, because some of these people will develop talents they never knew they had as a result of that handicap and wanting to serve God, and things will come out that they can do they never realized. If it hadn't happened, they would never be doing them. And so here this lady who was somewhere between 100 and 110 years of age, and what is she doing? She is an active person praying. Now, what was she praying about? Just praying for herself? I don't believe so. She was praying certainly to see the coming of the Messiah, that the ushering in of the kingdom of God. That's what certainly was on her mind and praying for. I believe that woman probably prayed for many of the things in the community of Jerusalem where she lived and going on there. I'm sure she saw many of the hypocrisies and problems that took place with the rabbis and the Pharisees, Sadducees. And she was praying that God would come and begin to straighten out the mess. She didn't lose faith or heart. And certainly God saw that. I believe today, too, when people in the Church of God, men, male or female, they're up in years, they have physical problems and all of that, where they cannot physically serve or help. They can't pick up chairs afterwards, can't sweep the floors or anything, but they can pray. And that is a tremendous service. And God hears those prayers and sees that here's a person who can't physically do things, but that's not going to stop them from doing what they can do. And they're developing a talent, too. Becomes a real talent to be able, what is it Paul said here, pray affectionate prayers. You know, your first prayer, that's it. You don't improve. You don't learn how to have better contact with God as you go on. You know, you learn more how to pray by you doing it, right? And just like in anything else, when people discover some talent, the more they do it, the better they get at it. So yes, there are a lot of things here that we can do as we look at teaching, serving, leading. These are spiritual talents. Showing mercy. How much mercy did we show before we were called into the church, into conversion, into Jesus Christ? A lot of times people were heavily judgmental and were not very merciful. That's a spiritual talent. And it is through God's Spirit that is developed even more. Giving love, kindly affectionate to one another, zeal for the truth, patience. Sure, these are all attributes of character. They're also talents. And they're gifts. All things come from above, as Paul said. Effective prayer, seeing and serving the needs of the saints. You know, another thing, too, a lot of times people cannot do certain things, but sending cards of encouragement, for example, to the prayer requests that we have on the table and in the bulletin. Those are things that a lot of times people may not be able to do a lot of physical things, but they can do that. And as I've already mentioned, and as Paul says here in verse 13, given to hospitality. Given to hospitality. All right, let's go to Matthew 25 and take a look again here. It's something I didn't cover earlier. In Matthew chapter 25, what are the things that God gives? What are the talents? Do you think the great athletes have these talents right now? Well, they're dormant, you might say, because yes, if they came to conversion, they would begin to hopefully see them. They don't do these things. It's just me, myself, and I. It's what I can do. And they buy huge, expensive mansions and homes, multiple homes. I just read in the paper this morning. A-Rod, what's his name, Rodriguez of the Yankees. He just sold his home over here in Miami for $30 million. He bought a piece of land it's actually a smart investment, I guess, $7.6 million. He bought this piece of land, and he put another $7.6 million in building this gigantic mansion, and turned around and sold it for $30 million. And where does it all go? To me. To self, right? Well, not that he has to give it all away, but the point I want to make is, you know, when you hear some of these astronomical things, I mean, I mentioned Tiger Woods. It's no secret. Tiger Woods, a number of years ago, bought the end of Jupiter Island up there for $40 million. And you know, couldn't you use some of that kind of cash, that kind of money? Nike paid him $60 million over I don't know how many years. Some of these athletes are getting, the quarterback of the Ravens team, you know, won the Super Bowl, has what, $160 million contract? Incredible, incredible. And what will they do with all of that? Put it in my bank for me, right? A rainy day. Not that they have to give it all away or anything like that, but the point is we don't see the same talents that are given to us in the church. and the talents to be able to give and to share, to serve and to do. Now, let me end here by going to Matthew chapter 25 and finish up. Matthew chapter 25. It's just something that we all need to, from time to time, stop and think, how can I do a better job? Are there things I could yet discover? Are there things I know but I just don't want to do that I could develop and that would be of service to God's people, service to Jesus Christ? Well, Matthew chapter 25, let's end by what Jesus had to say here in this kind of a parable, kind of an example both that he gives. And I'm just going to break in on verse 34 because it gets kind of long. Then the king will say to those on his right hand, come, you blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me food. I was thirsty, and you gave me drink. I was a stranger, you took me in. I was naked, and you clothed me, and I was sick, and you visited me, and I was in prison, and you came to me. Well, the righteous will answer in him and say, well, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, thirsty and give you drink? And when did we see you a stranger and take you in, or naked and clothe you? Or when did we see you sick or in prison and come to you? And the king will answer and say to them, assuredly I say to you, inasmuch as you did it to one of the least of these my brethren, you did it to me. That's interesting because he did not talk about all the works to the world. Now, there are many good things there of giving and helping those. Cornelius was one who gave much alms in Acts chapter 10, serving and helping other people. But here, this parable is precisely to those, because you did it to the least of these, my brethren. And now, what were they doing? This is really, in some cases, I think, more figurative than literal when you look at the example here, because he gives six areas that are listed in verse 35 and 36. They can be literal, depending on maybe what time period one lives in. They could be figurative, which I believe they mostly are. They could also be both. It could go either way. He's trying to make a point that you use your spiritual talents. You serve me by serving the brethren, by helping one another. These individuals who are on the right-hand side discovered and used their spiritual talent of love for God by actively sharing and serving others in need. And these people discovered and used their spiritual talents to serve, quote, the least of these, my brethren, and that was how they were serving Jesus Christ. And it's always good to go back and review this and think about this in ways. I don't know of anybody running around naked that we need to pass out clothes to. I was in prison the other day on Tuesday visiting an individual, but I don't even know whether God is really calling that person or not. Time will tell in other visits. So I'm not going out and trying to open up all the prisons. And, you know, I think we need to look at this and realize a lot of these things, which are figurative, also are somewhat of an exaggeration to get across the point. And certainly in the Sermon on the Mount, there are exaggerations for effect that Jesus gave. You know, you get slapped on the right cheek, turned to the left cheek, and so forth. Well, is that what Jesus did? No. When he was about to be beaten up and thrown over a cliff, he ran and ducked into the crowd. What is he telling you in things like that? Do not seek revenge. Do not seek revenge. And retaliation on these things to get, quote, even, which human nature wants to always do. Well, here are the things when we look at some of this. He spells out, Paul spelled out a few of the things to us. Jesus, in a very general way, gave six things right here to those who are seated on the right-hand side, as he uses in the parable, helping us to think a little bit. And as I said earlier, look around. What needs to be done? How can I serve? What can I do? And we take initiative. We don't just wait to have somebody come and tell us what to do. Well, brethren, let's take this and discover, develop, and use our God-given talents and gifts.